Hello, everyone, and welcome to another live episode of Jedi Way. I am the outlaw John Roca. Well, for the purposes of this episode, I'm John Solo. That's right. Let me have that. I don't have much. Let me have that. And I'm excited to welcome back again as my co-host for the show, Laura Kelly. How are you, Laura?
I'm amazing, and I'm still just Laura Kelly. I didn't know I was supposed to change my name for the occasion. Now I know for next time. But yeah, no, I'm good. How are you, John? How was your day?
Very, very busy. A lot of recording, SCN Live, right into Top 10 Golden Ticket, right into a pre-pro for Impolite Truths, and right into our show. So, and it doesn't end after this. After this, I'm going to hang out with my Patreons for an hour and a half, and then on to Schmobates at 8 p.m. tonight to take on Frank Janish in a fun little Schmobates debate. So, you know, today is just one of those very, very long days in my life, but this is the one show I was looking forward to the most today because I love Han Solo as a character. And Laura, you suggested this the other day when we were talking about what we want to talk about this week. You said you just seen Solo: A Star Wars Story again, and it gave you the idea to talk about Han Solo, and I thought that was brilliant. And so that's what we're doing today, ladies and gentlemen, talking about the legacy of Han Solo in Star Wars and revisiting Solo: A Star Wars Story. Laura, what is it about Han Solo that kind of just, moves you? Or do you even like the character? Do you enjoy the character? Because I know you came in through Ahsoka Tano. Is Han Solo someone you just kind of got to know through other people's ideas of him? Or is someone that you've kind of grown to care about and love as a character?
You know, it took me a while to get there, but I think Solo: A Star Wars Story played a big role in like sort of making me come around when it comes to Han Solo. When I watched the original trilogy, like having come into it in like, you know, the 21st century watching Han Solo and the way he sort of behaves in the original trilogy, he always sort of came off as like, don't get mad, a little bit like toxic to me. Like I wasn't sometimes like the attitude and shit, I was just like, I don't know. But kind of, you know, in my further study of him, I've sort of come to appreciate who he is as a character and what he brings to the story. You know, we often think in Star Wars about the first thing that comes to mind is like the Jedi and the X-Wings and the lightsabers. But I think that Han's hero's journey, he really does have his own hero's journey throughout the trilogy. And then, you know, we get these added pieces on with Force Awakens and with Solo. I think it's really something great that they brought to the table with this character that they really could have left as a one-dimensional character. And they didn't. So I'm happy to dive into him today. I definitely have come around a little bit, a little more open-minded about Han, my approach to him. So I'm excited. Let's dive in.
Definitely. This is one of the things I look forward to the most is because Laura and I have such two different approaches to Star Wars. It's always fun, the conversations and debate we get into, because it's a way to kind of experience it through another person's point of view. Because sometimes you can get very caught up in the people around you feeling a certain way about it. But if you get kind of step out of that and hear from other people and their approach to it and their points of views, it kind of gives you a whole new way, a whole new perspective on a character or a scene or a movie or a TV show in the Star Wars universe for sure. And before we get into it, just want to remind you all, we are live. So thank you so much for the 32 of you that are in live right now. I'm sure those numbers will grow as we go along, but please remember to hit that like button, hit that thumbs up button. If you're watching us later, leave a comment. And if you're watching us now, we will answer your questions live on the show. So as we talk about Han Solo and Solo: A Star Wars Story and all of that, please remember to send in your Streamlabs and your Super Chats. You see the address there in between us, up right there in between us. It's also pinned to the chat and in the description if you want to send a Streamlabs or if you want to send a Super Chat, we'll be answering them. And then in the second part of the show, after probably the hour mark, we'll try to bring in some people live to ask their questions of Laura and I live, who are in the chat as well. So, all right, Laura, let's jump into it. Where do you want to start first?
Let's start where it all began. Let's start in A New Hope. I want to kind of go back to release order in this particular discussion, because really that was where most people were introduced to Han Solo. So I want to sort of dive in and let's sort of explore, you know, that first scene, which is Han in the cantina. A lot of people's favorite scenes in Star Wars. But we meet a very different character in that scene than what we end up with by the end of the trilogy, and even what we end up with at the end of this film. So I want to sort of dive into that, because forgive me, I'd rather skip over the sort of who shot first, Han shot Greedo. Like,
How dare you?
I don't care. I get the argument. Some people sort of argue that, like, oh, Han shot first, that makes him a bad guy. Han wouldn't shoot first because he wouldn't do that because he's inherently good. Let's skip over that part and kind of dive into what's next. Because when we meet Han Solo, the first thing that we see is him basically, whether he shot first or not, brutally murder an alien being sitting directly across from him, pretty much at point blank range under the table.
Yeah.
So the first impression of Han Solo was just like, this guy's kind of heartless. He walks out the door and he's just like flicking a quarter to the bartender being like, sorry about the mess, and just goes along his merry way. Mm-hmm. So this is a really interesting character to meet right at the beginning of this story. We get a very clear first impression of Han Solo and what we think we're going to expect of him. What were your initial reactions to this first scene?
I thought it was badass, you know, because I was at that age, you know, as a young male teen, it was at that age where seeing him do, or I guess early teen, where you see him kind of, not even early teen, childhood, but seeing the fact that he could handle himself in that moment, you know, I feel like it was been in my blood since birth, my love of Westerns, and that's a very Western moment. It's essentially... you know, like a gunfight between two gunslingers. And remember, I know the way you're painting it is a little too clean. He is a bounty hunter who is trying to catch Han and bring him back. And Han, you know, kind of shoots and gets out of the situation because he's a survivor, you know, and you'll find that out later on as the character has progressed. And we've got more and more media that has given us our background on Han Solo. Certainly he's a hard scrabble kid who came up in through tough means to survive in the world. And so for him to, at this point in his life, he understands survival in this tough galaxy. And while Luke is off there later on with the Jedi and off there flying X-Wings, my man's down below having to deal with the real life of the world and being a smuggler, being essentially a hired thief, and having to finagle his way out of certain situations. The fact that he is the first one to shoot so he can stay alive is not a negative thing, in my opinion, but it's a survivor's mentality from a place that he is used to, or from a mentality he's used to adapting when he's in certain situations that are life-threatening.
That's very true. And I think it's really interesting that you bring up Luke in this situation because these two characters are such like a juxtaposition with each other, especially in this first film. We see so much of Han Solo pushing back and not wanting to commit to this fight, not wanting to commit to saving the princess. He's really just in it. He's pretty much just in it for the money.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see this very sort of selfish attitude from him through most of the first half of the film. And it's really not until we are on the Death Star that we see that first, I think I referred to it once as chaotic energy, but basically where he's like charging at stormtroopers with this, you know, in his stormtrooper costume with the helmet off, but, you know, openly screaming and charging at a bunch of stormtroopers who are then for some reason running away, even though there are more of them. But, you know, that's sort of the turning point for this character of like, oh, he's not necessarily 100% a bad guy. Like, we kind of get that hint of it a little bit. He's very charismatic. And you know, even though he's got this sort of cynicism to it, he still has this sort of, I don't know, you know, he's got that sort of like macho man, like hot cowboy look going for him. So it, you know, it works in a lot of ways, but I do think that my first impression of Han generally, I think, was that, you know, Han shooting first was a pretty strong thing. He's a tendency to talk his way out of things. And this is a very, I mean, the move with Greedo in the cantina is very, it's a very aggressive, very violent move just from the start for a guy that oftentimes has talked his way out of things, or at least tries to.
Yeah. That's funny. I mean, I totally understand that. And yeah, in that moment, he uses lethal force because in that moment, he thinks that's the only option available to him. And you know, to be fair, we don't know that history, we don't know that story, we don't know that world, that environment, right? And so whatever our feelings are when we first watch it, whether we are kind of taken aback by the fact that it's an aggressive, violent move, or we're kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool that he kind of shoots his way out of a situation, at least in this situation, you kind of respect it. And you might be making a really great point. I think you are making a really great point here, Laura, because the rest of the film spends time not showing him do those kinds of things. having other people kind of break him like a wild horse, in essence, and kind of corral him a little bit to understand what's really important and what's not important. And I think that's where we're, when we get to Solo, A Star Wars Story, is where I get to be a little bit confused about it, because the guy at the end of Solo, A Star Wars Story is essentially the guy at the end of A New Hope. And I'm like, well, did he regress before A New Hope started and then had to learn a lesson all over again? I don't know. But, you know, Kira says to him, you're the good guy, you know, and this is something about Han in this situation, him leaving his friends behind, him doing the things that he did. It's kind of a little bit not congruent with where he's at after Solo, A Star Wars Story. So it's kind of shocking to see him in the situation. But, you know, he is a survivor. He takes that extra money from Kenobi to take him to Alderaan and what have you. So he's a guy who figures things out and never questions his luck in certain situations, it seems like.
No, he really doesn't. He really just kind of, he talks his way out of things and then rolls with the punches. And that whole scene with Obi-Wan Kenobi, I forgot, with the overcharging him, basically. I don't even need to know what the galactic credit transition standard is to know that, like, homeboy just got overcharged. But he was fine with it because he was sort of swindling him too. And there we are. So yeah, A New Hope is a fun introduction to Han. We see him sort of go back and forth where he's, you know, he's got his moments of courageousness on the Death Star, but then we get to Yavin 4 and he's packing up a bunch of, you know, cargo to take to Jabba to pay him off. We think he's going to leave the fight. And then he ends up, you know, coming in and saving the day. And I think that, you know, that really does get to the heart of Han Solo in the perfect way that you just quoted Kira. And that he is the good guy, and he can keep telling people and keep playing the way that he, you know, thinks that he's not a good guy. But at the end of the day, there is that consistency with the character that I appreciate.
That's true. But he's also a good guy on his terms, Laura. That's the thing, as you're talking, kind of occurs to me as I think about his actions in the film, because nothing says that he would have gotten back on time. Do you know what I'm saying? He took a chance. By the time he maybe turned around and came back, the entire attack could have been wiped out. Luke could have been killed. Leia could have been killed. They all could have been killed. But he happens to come back because it's a movie and the timing is great the way it's set up in the film, so that when he does reemerge, you're happy to see him. Because just like Luke, when Han is leaving, when you're watching the movie for the first time, you're kind of heartbroken that Han is leaving them, and you're frustrated that he won't understand that he has a bigger role to play here. And when he does show up, it's great, but he's showing up on his terms. So this is the thing about Han Solo that's very interesting. Everything, for the most part, is on his terms. And I think that's where Leia is kind of deserves a lot of credit, because she's the one that kind of breaks him of that and makes him understand that he can't have his way all the time in these situations in life, you know. So it's great that he showed up, but he could have shown up a second too late, or not at all, or not been able to affect it at all. And then where would you be with Han Solo then? Oh, I went back. Oh, they're all dead. Oh boy, that's a terrible. I just made a terrible decision, you know. And so those things are what you understand about Han as well, is that he's very much at this point in the first movie in A New Hope. The first one was released, rather. He is very much his own person and arrives when he thinks he needs to arrive.
Exactly. And you bring up Leia, who is another very strong personality in addition to Han. And those two, like, those two things colliding is quite something to be seen. And we see a lot more of that at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back, where he's trying to leave. It's been 3 years. For some reason now, he's now trying to leave. But basically trying to get off world, but now he has to go save Luke, and now he's trying to get off world again, but oh, now he's got to go save Leia. So it's really, it's always coming back around to, you know, Han's going to come in and save the day. He's going to do it on his own terms. I totally agree with that. But I do think that it's sort of interesting that when we meet him again in Empire Strikes Back, he's still kind of the same dude. He's still this, like, angry, cynical dude that's, like, telling deck officers to, like, get the hell out of his way so he can go out on a tauntaun and search for his friend. I mean, it's there's good intentions there, but there's still so much, like, aggressive attitude. Some of that is where I was a little bit, like, especially in Empire Strikes Back, I think, where I was a little bit put off.
I think this is a great question to consider, and maybe you're I feel like you're dancing around it, so I'm just going to put it out there. This is like white male privilege, right? And I know some people may get upset about that, but I know Laura Kelly's dancing around it without saying it, so I'm just going to say it. And that's That's what it can feel like. That's the thing. You have to open your mind. Like when I saw it as a kid and when I saw it later in my teens and through the years, I've loved Han Solo because he's very much a guy who does things on his own terms, because a lot of people don't get to do that in life. That's for sure. But there is a way you can look at this, a prism you can look at this, where Han is pretty much white male privilege. You know, I'm going to show up in a Fialetic and I'm going to take off. I'm going to make people feel sympathy for me, or I'm going to upset people, but I will show up. You know, I'll be cantankerous. I'll be push people around. I'll break rules because I think those rules can be broken at that time by me. But later I'm going to be mad that you broke the rules because I didn't agree with your decisions to break the rules, right? It's that idea of whatever he wants to do, it gets validated because the end result is positive. But how we got there is not necessarily the best way to do it. But he seems to end up landing on his feet most of the time until, of course, Ben Solo took care of business in Force Awakens. But yeah, pretty much most of the time he lands on his feet, no matter how rude or brusque or clumsy or awkward or pushy he is.
Yeah, that's the thing that we get with Empire Strikes Back. And you have to remember that this is the second chapter of a trilogy. We can't have everything resolve, and we can't have these characters build up to their peak in this second episode of a trilogy. You have to build up to it, and you've got to sort of leave them wanting for something, you know, in the end, so that we can get there in the end of the trilogy. But I think with Han in this particular film, and we see it a lot with his interactions with Leia, he just strikes me as being this very emotionally immature person. He's very temperamental, and you know, when he's got Leia sort of cornered in the Millennium Falcon, you know, she's on board for it. She kisses him back. I'm not saying that he was being pushy. He was being a little bit pushy, but you know, it was consensual at least, you know, but it's just sort of strange that, you know, they've been running around the galaxy together for 3 years and it took this moment for them to finally like confront each other about their feelings. Like that's emotional immaturity, my friends. Like it shouldn't have taken 3 years to get there.
Wait, but to be fair, I think it's both of them, isn't it? She can be quite pushy and doing, I mean, to me, they seem like they're the two sides of the same coin. Leia breaks the rules. Leia pushes for what she wants. Leia walks into danger, and other people have to kind of adapt to her doing it. So I think both sides kind of so it makes sense to me that they wouldn't tell their feelings because they built these walls up to protect themselves. Solo, because of how he grew up. Leia, because of losing her planet and being adopted. Like there's so much about that is inherent in who they are. So there is a natural protective mechanism so that when they have those moments, I totally understand that you can look at it in a certain way that he's a little aggressive with her, but she's no wallflower, man. Leia pushes back and makes it kind of on her terms as well. When they kiss, and then she guilt trips him for sure when he takes off again, you know. So there's a thing where I think both of them having trouble putting down their emotional armor a little bit to actually tell the truth to each other. And I think that's why in the end with what happens to Ben Solo happens, why they break up, because they don't have the emotional maturity to understand the importance of the relationship and the conversations that need to happen to make a foundationally strong relationship, because they're so independent of each other.
They are very independent of each other, and they both have extremely strong personality types. Mm-hmm. And in any relationship that's going to cause friction. But at this, you know, at the same time, it can also be this sort of magnetic draw that is really fun to watch, which is why the romance between Han and Leia worked.
Yeah.
And while we've talked a lot about Han and Leia, I also want to talk a little bit about Han and Lando, because it's a really fun relationship to explore too. And I'm glad that they explored that even further in Solo, A Star Wars Story. I think they killed it. And I think Donald Glover in particular killed it in that role. But when we meet Lando in The Empire Strikes Back, we know immediately that there is a past here, and that they have had a conflict that definitely was left unresolved.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's fun to experience that in the movie, seeing them interact with each other and you know, as two dudes ball busting each other for sure about their thing. I mean, obviously Lando calling them names and whatever, but then of course what we find out later, the kind of turn, and then of course Lando hitting on Leia the whole time as well, and then eventually the betrayal there with Vader. But certainly you sense, and that speaks to the great acting abilities of Harrison Ford and Billy Dee Williams, that immediately there is a, like you said, Laura, there is a sense of a past, a relationship, a relationship that's gone back and forth in terms of who's the dominant, who's the submissive, depending on the situation. And so there is more there to explore. We get yet another color to Han Solo, because, and I don't want to skirt over this, Luke Skywalker, what he does for Luke at the beginning of the movie, that's actually one of the most magnanimous things he can do. Yes, it's, yeah, he ignores the rules. He rolls out there. They both could die, which is two less soldiers in the resistance, by the way. But he cares for Luke. He's kind of like a little brother. And it's funny because Solo doesn't have any kind of those familial connections in his past necessarily. So this is also something of a new relationship, this kind of big brother, little brother relationship that he has with Luke. And the way he takes care of Luke in the Tauntaun, everything like that, that's a powerful moment, or a powerful scene rather. And then you juxtapose it to what's going on with him and Lando, which they are essentially friends slash brothers who kind of can go back and forth with each other on an equal playing field.
Exactly. They're a little bit more on the level of like peers.
Yeah.
More so than him and Luke. And you're totally right. The relationship between him and Luke is very much like older brother, big brother, which I really appreciate. And it is interesting to see that, because then when we see it in Solo, you're right. There isn't really anybody in that role for Han. And so this is very much seems like a new sort of thing for him. But at the same time, he's got such great chemistry. Harrison and Mark have such great chemistry in these movies, as well as Billy Dee Williams and Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Their back and forth is just so much fun to watch, because you get Lando basically betraying the group, or so we think, and then back around, and it's this crazy sort of story that eventually works its way out. And it's great that we eventually get Lando back in Return of the Jedi, and he's joined up with the Rebellion too.
Yeah, yeah.
See that story actually play out and figure out how that came about. I think they're doing it in comics, but
yeah. But you know, and we progress through Empire Strikes Back, Laura, and Han Solo gets frozen in carbonite, right? Han is the one, and it takes him almost dying, or essentially dying, to finally kind of admit his feelings for Leia. She says it, but then he just says, "I know," which is cool. Certainly a cool moment for some people. But the other part could be, wow, you're just about to die and you really can't say those three words to the woman you love. You got to be that swashbuckling kind of half in, half out, or not as emotionally mature guy even at the end there. But you can look at it in both ways, I feel like.
Exactly. And I think I've said this before, but that scene will never not make me laugh. I feel like a lot of people are supposed to be very like emotional, and it's just like, very sort of sad moment. I will never stop thinking that it's funny. It's to me that his response is, "I know." And maybe it's because I sort of knew it was coming, because I sort of knew that moment in film was this big climactic moment that people have talked about ever since. So I sort of had that background going into it, but it just, even still watching it, it's just so freaking funny to me. And I don't really know why. It's probably because I'm also emotionally immature, but I really do appreciate that moment, because it leaves us in the perfect place for the end of the second part of the trilogy. Yeah. I love where it ends. You know, we end on this conflict, this unresolved question. And I love that it really was kind of due to the fact that Harrison Ford wasn't sure he wanted to come back, which is fair enough. Yeah. He was a star at that time. So
yeah, it's true. He was moving on to do other things. And of course, Indiana Jones was 1981, Raiders of the Lost Ark rather. And so going from there into other things, and he certainly wanted to expand and not be typecast. And you know, for people who may not remember this, but back in the 80s, you could get typecast. That's a certain thing, and not break out of even into the 90s, right? With the Jaleel White and Urkel, that's a terrible thing to try to walk past. Nowadays, we're more mature as viewers, where we open up our minds more to allow a person to play a certain character and then kind of break out of that and do something else. But at that time, you had people like William Shatner in Star Trek, who couldn't get out of playing couldn't get out of being called Captain Kirk or being seen as Captain Kirk. And the same thing here with Leonard Nimoy and Spock. And then boom, you have Harrison Ford, who wants to break out of this and doesn't want to fall into that, because Harrison's an actor first and foremost, and he wants to break out of this. And so he does tell, George that, kill me off. And then of course, George kind of, finagles it a little bit so that he could be killed off if they don't get him to come back for the third one, which they do. And I'm glad they do, because that opening barge scene is so great, Laura.
It really is. And we start with Han being unfrozen in carbonite and then waking up and being the same Han that he was before. He hasn't lost that cynicism, but now we've added in this sort of resolution with Leia has sort of come down, where, you know, she's the one who saves him and comes into the carbon freezing, not chamber, I guess, wherever he's hanging as a decoration on Jabba's wall.
Yeah.
And is the one to actually free him from the carbonite. And I love that, you know, right off the bat, we're sort of solidifying the relationship there. There's no mm-hmm. more conflict there. We dealt with the conflict in the last movie. Right. So, you know, that part of it at least has sort of been resolved. But I love that we're still getting, you know, these, Harrison Ford really brings a lot of these great comedic moments to the, mm-hmm. to this trilogy. We see, you know, him on the barge with Luke, basically yeah. telling him, like, you're going to die here, actually. and, you know, he just hasn't lost that sort of scoundrel attitude that we've known and loved him for so far.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, you know, it's so ironic what you bring up here, Laura. It's a great point. Like in the first movie, in A New Hope, he saves Luke, essentially, and Luke ends up saving the resistance there as they destroy the Death Star. And then in the second movie, he saves Luke right at the beginning, but he's the one that eventually, as we start the third movie, is the one that's going to need saving from Jabba and the situation that he's in. And you're right, as it comes out of it, very funny, you know, the stuff with Chewbacca and everything like that, the back and forth they have, and then with what happens to Boba, all of that works in the humorous context of a Star Wars movie. See, people, you can lead with jokes in a Star Wars movie. You just got to lead with good jokes, good humor that you can enjoy in the beginning of a Star Wars movie. And that whole barge scene has it combined with the action. You know, he comes out of that and they save him. And so once again, and I want to ask you this, Laura, as we go into the third movie of the trilogy here, of the original trilogy, is Han Solo growing as a character? And is Harrison Ford growing the character in his performance as we get to the third film?
It's a good question to bring the Harrison Ford performance into it. That I'm not, I may not be totally convinced of that. It is sort of kind of, I can see where he would want to get away from the typecasting because the character is still the same character. You know, he grows and he evolves and becomes a better person, but it's, yeah, I can see where his fear was. I can totally understand that. But I think that at this point, the character Han Solo has grown immensely. We saw in the first and second films that he's very resistant to commit. He just wants to get back to Tatooine and resolve his debts with Jabba. And mm-hmm. we open this film by resolving that. So now we've got Han Solo fully, completely committed to the rebellion, to its mission. You can hear it in his voice as they're taking off from Tatooine, as he's thanking Luke. And he's like, now I owe you one. But his thanks to him is so genuine that you really can feel like, okay, like now he's really in it. It's not just for Leia. It's also for Luke. It's also for the mission. And, you know, I think the next time we see him, he's a general and he's heading down to Endor to lead the ground assault.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's fully in the fight, the progression of the character from the resistant smuggler, you know, swashbuckling, sarcastic guy to eventually, and maybe he had a lot of time to think of that carbonite and think things over, but eventually to the guy who is leading the fight down there on Endor and having that great moment with him and Leia where you reverse the I know moment, all of that. But it seems like Solo in the third movie is along for the ride, whereas in the first two movies, it's about making him stand out as this cool dude. In the third movie, it seems very clear that they're peers here, Luke and Leia, and they're all peers, and of course Lando as well, all peers of Han, if not maybe even slightly a little advanced past Han, which is a very interesting thing to consider as well, because I think the foundations for the eventual breakup of Leia and Han are in this movie, in Return of the Jedi.
In what ways would you say that?
Because I feel like Leia has kind of moved past Han. Yes, she does fall in love with him. Yes, they'll get married. Yes, they'll have kids. But they can't survive what happens to Ben. And it's because Leia has progressed in her emotional maturity. Han has not. And he does have that moment with Ben on the walkway in The Force Awakens where he really conveys his affection for his son. But he's still a man chasing action. You know, we hear about it. He went back to smuggling. He went back to doing this thing, the stuff with what's the name of that group that they have with those tentacle creatures?
Oh, the Guavian Death Gangs and the Kanja Club.
Yeah, Kanja Club, all that. The Mark Ellis part of it all. Yeah, all that stuff in there. Like all of that. It's Han going back to what Han did in his 20s and 30s. He's doing it in his 50s and 60s, or however old the character is at that time. You're like, you haven't grown. you're still doing the same stuff that you did back then because you're still kind of trying to recapture your manhood, you know? And Haskell and Jake, who are in the chat, they understand what it's like to be old trying to recapture their manhoods. They get it, you know? Nice shot to the lightsaber stuff, boys. I knew I was going to get you back eventually. But yeah, they understand it. And so what you're seeing here is that Han goes back to the stuff he knows instead of doing the harder work, which is sitting there with the loss, growing from the loss, understanding why the loss happened, reaching out to his wife, having conversations with his wife about why did this happen? How can we fix it? How can we become stronger to save our son? Blah, blah, blah. No, he just takes off and starts smuggling again. And so this is where what you see here is that she is starting to move past him in Return of the Jedi, and he will eventually just kind of stay where he's at. You know, maybe I'm crazy, but that's how I take it.
Well, I'm looking forward to revisiting Return of the Jedi and kind of looking at it through that lens, because I like that interpretation a lot. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think I was sort of coming at it from the point of view that, like, all of these events that have happened in the original trilogy and the Galactic Civil War were acted as this sort of catalyst for, like, an attitude change.
Yeah.
You know, and Han's behavior and his approach to friendships and to relationships, romantic or otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I guess I hadn't really jumped as far ahead as The Force Awakens. And in thinking about even in the Aftermath trilogy, I think they addressed the fact that even before Han and Leia, like, officially broke up, he was off, like, coaching racing on some other planet. So even before he was, like, really, really out of it and it was, you know, the cord was completely cut, he was still being distant, you know, and probably afraid to sort of be attached to everything that was probably going on with Leia. I imagine her life was very complicated, you know, going through the process of the, you know, leaving the Senate and forming the resistance. And that would have been hard to be around. And Han just would rather do what he was better at, I guess, especially if there was this whole, the catalyst of that relationship falling apart was the dark, was Ben Solo falling to the dark side.
Yeah. And Laura, I mean, I'm sure you have your thoughts on this and your opinions on this, but being the significant other of a powerful woman is not easy for many men, let alone a man like who's not that emotionally mature like Han Solo. I think he's a great character. I love him as a dude looking at another dude, but I also am able to kind of take a step outside of it and look at the fact that Han couldn't handle the fact that his wife became this massively powerful person in the resistance, massively power political figure, as we read in the books that are in during that time, like Bloodlines and all that, these books that are in the middle of these years in between Force Awakens and Return of the Jedi. You see that Leia, that are canon, you see that Leia is a very powerful force in the universe and in the galaxy, whereas Han, you know, eventually, and I wonder if there's something to explore here, would Leia kind of realize that, he was really great for when we were getting together, but now, you know, I'm not getting that kind of counsel. I'm not getting that kind of support from home. You know, we did a review of The Crown season 4, and the way that Margaret Thatcher's husband handles things, he understands. He gets his jabs in, but he understands that she is a powerful woman, and he is a backseat to that because he's very confident in who he is and what he brings to the table as an intelligent man who's accomplished stuff on his own. Whereas Han, what has he accomplished? He's a smuggler. You know, it's like, what has he accomplished compared to a woman running the galaxy? You know.
Well, and he was also a general and a hero of the rebellion. Right. I mean, I wouldn't undercut that.
Hold on a second. He's a general, like, let's just make this guy general. It isn't like he's gone through the ranks. He wasn't like a private, then a lieutenant, then a captain, then a major. Like, he was handed the generalship because it's a makeshift army. That's what I would throw in there. As someone who's
it's a good point. But I have to say, the Force Awakens Han that we get is one of my favorite Han Solos. I really love the Han Solo that we have in this movie. I love everything from, like, the gravelly voice to, like, his old torn up jacket that apparently is somehow still a new jacket. I love the speech that he gives to Rey and Finn where he's talking about how the Jedi were real. You know, this is, that in itself is, like, it's such a far cry from the man that we knew. You know, he says he thought it was all mumbo jumbo, but I really love that we do get that sort of maturation of this character a little bit in some ways. And, you know, it makes sense. He's considerably older than he was in the original trilogy. So that part of it kind of checks out, but you know, we do still sort of circle back to, like, that crazy chaotic energy, because right after that we get the Guavian Death Gang Kanji Club confrontation with the Rathtars, and we see Han, I think he chucks one of the people into a Rathtar, like he picks them up and throws them in. So he's, that Han is still there, you know, which I think everybody appreciated, and hopefully as much as the Chewie were home line, which I think, you know, touched a lot of people in a really big way. Totally understand.
Well, Wayne Edwards says something funny. He says, Roka is on Solo hard, LOL. No, I'm talking about the character. I love Han Solo. It's arguably my favorite character in the Star Wars universe. But there's a, because I enjoy Westerns, and he's very much a cowboy. But there is, you know, like you see at the end of Searcher, The Searchers with John Wayne, like you see at the end of Unforgiven, you like at the end of it all, if it costs you everything to still be that swaggering, what have you, then really, was it all worth it? You know, like, it's fun to be doing that when you're young, but as you get older, those impulses are actually what damages relationships, what damages your ability to connect with people. And I think the character of Han Solo reverts back to these things. And he's even like, look, Laura, I'm not trying to be too hard on him, but it's like a dude in his 50s trying on a high school jacket. You know, you're like, you know, it was kind of 30 years ago, guy, 35 years ago, and you're still trying to put on the high school jacket to show people that you're still somebody, like Ed O'Neill used to do in Married with Children. And you see that with Han still putting on the old thing, still looking at it. I get it. It's for the character and for people, fans, to recognize him. And of course, I totally get it. But still, it's a little weird at times that he hasn't progressed. It doesn't mean that he still can't have those emotional moments like he does, like you said, when he says it's all true. And there's even a strain of melancholy, which I think is a great performance by Harrison Ford when he says it's all true, you know, because it was stuff that he doubted, you know, and maybe a little piece of him is like, well, if I hadn't doubted it, maybe I'd have a better, stronger connection with Leia, with Luke, what have you. Maybe I could have gone, you know, why hasn't Han visited Luke on Ahch-To? Why hasn't he flown out there to force the kid to get back in the game, to talk to him about Ben? Why haven't we had that? Why did he go off and just start smuggling and not want to deal with repairing these emotional bridges that have been burnt, but not necessarily by him, but certainly he is connected to these bridges. Why didn't he do all these things? And I think it's because at the end of the day, as much as Han Solo cares for Leia and Luke, he doesn't have that emotional maturity or vocabulary or understanding to be able to repair those breaks. You know, it doesn't mean he doesn't love them. He just doesn't know how to do it.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And you know, when you bring this up, and I think that sort of leads us into a good question of, you know, when Han leaves and anytime he reverts back to sort of his classic smuggler self, Chewbacca is there by his side. So I would love to sort of explore the question of, like, who is Han Solo without Chewbacca? We saw a little bit in, like, the Aftermath trilogy of them being separated. Yeah. And Han's only goal, despite the fact that his, like, pregnant wife is at home, is to, like, go and find Chewie and to save him. So I think, you know, there's that bond there that is so strong. And we'll talk about it a little bit more when we talk about Solo. But that relationship is always one, regardless of what else is going on in his life, be it with Ben Solo, be it with Leia, be it with Luke. Chewbacca's always there. You know, he's always got his back in any situation. He's always there to deal with the emotional immaturity, which is probably due to the fact that he's so old and probably has some emotional maturity himself. There, it balances out there a little bit. It works.
Yeah, I think so. I think also because he forgives Han, because like you said, we find out in a Solo Star Wars story that Chewie is 190 years old when they meet. And so it's like Chewie has a different perspective on the world than Han does. So he's always going to be older than Han. So whatever Han's going through, there's probably more understanding, more patience, more respect for what Han is doing and what he's going through. Plus, he loves him as a friend. So, you know, we all have those friends who are that. And you kind of just kind of accept who they are and love them anyway. And sometimes we are those friends who are those things, and we appreciate the people that love us anyway. And I'm including everybody in this because it's all comparison, depending on what relationships you have. And so we appreciate that because we all are on our own journey of growth, our own journey of emotional maturity and progression. And look, at 30 years old, I would be looking at this completely differently. But I'm of a different age now where I can look at this man and analyze him and the things he's gone through and what they've shown us in these movies and take a look at who he is as a person. And in just pointing these things out does not mean that this is a terrible person or that he's a bad person. It's just pointing these things out to have a fun conversation about Han Solo, the character, throughout the movies.
Exactly. And it's a nuanced performance that we get out of Han Solo, out of Harrison Ford. And, you know, you've been with this character for a long time. I know that you love Han Solo. We're ragging on him because it's funny and because it's fun and because there are pieces that we can break apart. Yeah. You know, every character in Star Wars, whether we love him or hate him, has that. Yeah. I have lots of favorite characters that I would love to sit and just like rag on him if we want to for an hour plus. But I like the way that you're sort of open to the fact, I know that you love this character, but you totally understand where his faults are and why it has made him the way that he is today. So don't anyone be mistaken in the chat. John Rucka loves Han Solo.
I do. Like, and the thing is, Laura, and loving people despite their flaws is a true kind of love. Loving people in spite of their flaws, that's actual love. If you only love someone when they're doing good things or when they're a good person, I don't know if you fully love that person. You have flaws too. So it's like we all have flaws. So we look for that person who understands our flaws, forgives us for our flaws, and loves us in spite of our flaws, because that's true. That's the time that you can really lay down the shield and lay down the sword and give yourself and surrender yourself to someone, because they're willing to navigate your flaws with you as you are with them. And so those are the differences when you look at that. So in no way, me pointing out his flaws in no way means I don't like him. Hell, Christian and I give each other shit all the time, giving each other about our flaws, of how we handle things, and we still care of each other. We're still friends. So it's just like, that's part of the game. You know, when you love a character as much as I love Solo, understanding his shortcomings is in no way denigrating him as a person.
Exactly. You got to love them at their worst. Mm-hmm. If you're going to love them at their best, it works out that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want that to be a segue into what we're going to talk about next, which is Solo, a Star Wars Story. I don't by any means think it's the worst. I actually really love this movie. And I bring it up because I made a weird choice in my viewing order of Star Wars films recently, where I watched The Force Awakens and then immediately watched Solo, which is really sad. And it was a really interesting choice to make on my part. I don't really know why I did it. Right. But I want to dig into that a little bit, but go ahead.
No, so before we get into Solo, let's finish up Force Awakens and The Rise of Skywalker, because he does come back in The Rise of Skywalker. Do we want to touch on anything there? I have a couple things I'd like to say, but do you want to touch on anything with those two films, with Solo?
I do want to mention a really funny story with The Rise of Skywalker, where I went and saw that movie, I think, four times in theaters. Keep in mind, I didn't actually love that movie, but the fourth time I saw it, I was with my family, and my cousin got up right before the Han Solo movement and left to go to the bathroom, missed the entire thing.
Oh.
And it was... it was so brutal, but it was so funny. And I really tried. I tried to be like, no. But it was a Star Wars movie. You don't want to disrupt someone's experience. So, but whoopsies. But no, I love this moment in The Rise of Skywalker. Like I said, it's not my favorite Star Wars movie. Right. I should have segued that when we were talking about, you know, loving someone at their worst and their best. Sure. That would have been a good segue to go into Rise of Skywalker there. But I love this scene. The Rise of Skywalker has a lot of moments for me that are really small moments that I love. I don't love the big picture of the movie. I love the small moments. And this Han Solo, Kylo Ren, Ben Solo confrontation on the Death Star ruins is one of my favorite moments in the film. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely. Having someone who's being someone who's lost his father, having your father come back to give you a moment of counsel. That's the one thing you miss the most, ladies and gentlemen, when you have a parent who's like been a counsel for you in life and who you've loved and respected and has taught you so much and who you have had your battles with and what have you, you miss their counsel when they're gone, because no one knows you deeper than your parents do. If they've, you know, if stuck around and raised you, what have you, no one knows you deeper than your parents do. And so when you don't have that counsel, you can go off, you can lose your way, you know, and Ben doing what he did at a young age, also Ben emotionally immature, killing his dad, struggling with the light inside of him, trying to kill that light that's there, the good, which is what Solo was constantly told from Kira to Leia and beyond, like, you're a good person. Ben tried to kill that was inside of him, and killing Solo, he thought would kill that. But no, it doesn't, because your struggles are your struggles. And when he shows up again to talk to Ben in that critical moment with Rey and Kylo, and by the way, saving Rey's life when he shows up, it's that piece of counsel that you need. And you know, who's to say that whether he actually showed up or didn't? Because obviously, there's no Force ghosts when you're not a Jedi, from what we understand. But in Ben's mind, he showed up, and maybe Ben projected it in some kind of psychotic break in that moment. And there was his dad to give him advice. And I thought, I'm not gonna lie to you, I cried. I cried in that scene, or I got emotional at least in that scene because of the experiences I've had. And I thought it was really well done. So I agree with you, Laura, 1,000%. That's a really good scene in the movie.
It really is. And it's even better in the novelization somehow, believe it or not. It's incredible. But I really do like that moment with Han Solo and Rise of Skywalker. I'm glad you brought it up because I forgot to include it in that line. I had the same thing where, how many movies is Han Solo in? My mind just went to 5. So it sticks. Rise of Skywalker counts. Right. Sorry.
Yeah. And one last thing for the people who think I hate Han Solo. You got to give him credit for Rise of Skywalker. Force Awakens. Because it takes true strength. He knows Ben is going to kill him. I think he knows Ben is going to kill him. But he wants to try. Because he has to try. And why? Because he wasn't emotionally mature enough to confront the fact that his son left them and didn't go after his son. He just went back to smuggling again and let his son go off with Snoke and let his son go. He pursued him for a little bit, then eventually gave up and became and reverted back to his old stuff. Him walking across that steel plank or walkway is his penance that he's doing for the times that he wasn't there for his son. He is willing to risk his life to save his child. And in the end, it does cost him his life, but he does 2 movies later save his child. So it's like that is a moment that you can give Han Solo so much credit, because he does love people. He's just not always good with the emotional vocabulary of maturity. And I think a lot of us in our lives might know people like that who show us that love but don't know quite how to express it, you know. And I think that he deserves a lot of credit for making that doing that walk towards Ben.
Exactly. And I think watching The Force Awakens, and then I've also recently watched Rise of Skywalker, and then having gone into Solo was really like the emotion in that was so crazy, because I think part of it was the Adam Driver performance, where we see a lot in The Rise of Skywalker, him doing a lot of sort of movement that's inspired by Harrison Ford's performance. Which is, it's a lot of times it's subtle, a lot of times it's not, but it's really, really well done, and it's balanced throughout the film. And it's much more present in Rise of Skywalker than it is any other of the sequel trilogy. But then there's also these moments in Solo, A Star Wars Story, where Alden Ehrenreich, the way that he moves every now and then is so Harrison Ford. Yeah. These two young actors studied Harrison Ford's performances so closely that they just like completely blew it out of the water. Just for me, in say whatever you want. You know, I know a lot of people have strong feelings about both of those films, Rise of Skywalker and Solo, but it worked really well for me just in the way that those two actors honored the performance that came before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, having rewatched it today in preparation for our show, I was blown away by how much, because the first time I watched it in theaters, and to be fair, I've only seen it twice. And I watched it in the theaters both times for screening and then going with friends. And I think it's a good film. I don't think it's a great film, but I think the performance of Alden Ehrenreich, I think you have to watch it a few times to really understand what Alden is doing. This third time, I really could get the attention to detail, as you just mentioned, Laura, that Alden puts into creating Solo. The moments where he can bring out some of Harrison Ford's ticks or movements or body positions that Han Solo is in certain moments, Alden really captures that. And watching it this third time, I just was kind of sitting back and enjoying the performance of Alden Ehrenreich. Yeah, is he not your favorite? Does he fully capture Harrison Ford's energy? No. Can anyone? No. But this is his version of Solo. And so it's got that kind of thing to it that if it works for you, it really works for you. Just like Chris Pine capturing Captain Kirk, that is a completely different energy than William Shatner, but it works for the Star Trek they're creating, the reboot they did there. And I think this performance from Alden Ehrenreich works for this Solo in this world.
Well, I think it's also very comparable to the experience of seeing a Star Wars character in animation make the jump to live action. Mm-hmm. It's a different interpretation of the character.
Yeah, for sure.
And if you're not open to that, you're not going to enjoy it as much. You know, if you expect it to be exactly the same. No, Alden Ehrenreich is not the exact... He's not capturing the Harrison Ford completely. He's not doing a full-on imitation. Right. It's a sort of different interpretation of it. He can move like him a little bit. He can even, like, his facial expressions are mm-hmm. sort of, you know, he captures a lot of like a New Hope Han in the way that he can actually like move his face in the performance, yeah. which I really appreciated. But yeah. it's one of those things again that you don't really notice until you've watched the movie over and over and over again, like I have, or at least a few times. Yeah. But yeah, I think he knocked it out of the park. But I want to ask about sort of this story of the young Han Solo. Mm-hmm. Did it kind of line up to like what your expectations were for what Han was when he was younger? Did you get much into like the Legends stuff where you had any idea of what it was going
to
be?
Yeah. I mean, I'd been aware of Legends stuff. And to be honest with you, I mean, like I used to, like when I was a kid, I used to pick them up at 7-Eleven and read the paperbacks that are now Legends or canon. And, you know, eventually you hit an age where you don't read those anymore. And now it's so funny, this whole career over the last 5 years, it's so funny how many of those books, if I had saved, I'd have gone back to and could use to reference and what have you, that I really enjoyed reading. But at the time, it was just fun to revisit these characters again in those paperbacks. So you go in and you go into this situation here knowing that Han came up in a hard scrabble life. Han, you know, if they had you, I didn't know if they were going to throw in the pirate. I didn't know if they're going to throw in the, you know, the Wookiee kind of mom figure in his life. I didn't know what they were going to throw in. And they did throw in a love story, of course, which if you go back and read some of the legend stuff, he does have a love story with a fellow Karelian there as well. And they break out of being in servitude to the Hutt clan. So there's a lot of that. And I think that's one of the things that I would ding the movie for, is I would have liked to have seen more of the Han Solo backstory, growing up as a kid, what he negotiated, maybe the first 20 minutes of it, showing his progression to where, boom, it changes over. Because from the beginning, it's just Han jumping into a speeder and we're on board, kind of almost like a James Bond beginning, where it's an adventure. And then, boom, we get the Solo, a Star Wars Story logo that comes up. The film is shot incredibly well. I think this time around, Laura, I was blown away by the cinematography, by the action sequences, even more by the direction that Ron Howard does in the movie. I think the movie suffers from some plot issues and some dialogue in some certain scenes, but overall, you can't argue the look of the film and the pacing of the film in certain action sequences. But the way Han Solo is introduced, I wished we got a little bit more of what makes this guy who's this guy, because I think they banked on the fact that you already know this character, so we're just going to start here. And I wish we had more.
Do you think the Phantom Menace in that sort of reaction may have put them off a little bit from going too young with the start of this character in a prequel?
Explain. What do you mean by that?
I mean, you know, we got
You mean with
young Anakin? Okay. Yeah, we had this young performance from this very young actor who didn't have a ton of experience, and there was so much like negativity that came out of all of the reactions. Right. Specifically, I think a lot of it focused on him.
Yeah.
So I wonder if maybe that was I would wonder if that was maybe some motivation to not go too young with
it's
Han.
It's a valid consideration, but I think also it's about casting. And I think what you saw in Phantom Menace is not the best choice in Jake Lloyd, and also not the best director for kids in George Lucas. Hell, you know, a lot of adults complain being directed by George Lucas, including Harrison Ford. So I can't imagine a child would know what to say to George to get the best performance out of them. And so a little bit, I think you can not a little bit, but I think you can blame a lot of it on George Lucas and his ability to direct Jake Lloyd. If you cast another actor and you put them in the hands of someone like Ron Howard, who has been a child actor into a director himself, Andy Griffith the show and beyond, I think Ron would have the vocabulary to speak to a child actor like that and get great performances out of them. If you watch a lot of Ron Howard films, there are children throughout his movies who deliver fantastic performances. Watch Parenthood. There are kids all over that movie, and they deliver great work, including a young Joaquin Phoenix, a young Martha Plimpton, a lot of people involved in that are young at that time. and they deliver great work throughout. So it's just, I think sometimes just a combo of things that you have to get right. And they could have gone that route, but I hear you. Maybe they were gun shy with what happened with Jake Lloyd, and maybe they didn't want the responsibility of handing a iconic character, all putting it on a young child's shoulders and asking them to convey that character and risk the backlash of it. That's a valid point I hadn't considered before.
No, I mean, I think you make a good point too. If Ron Howard had been the director from the get-go, it may have gone differently, but because he was brought in so late and they only had so much time and so many funds to, you know, redo everything, that movie suffered a lot, I think, from that sort of turnover. Whether or not the Lord and Miller cut would have been any better, who's to say? Yeah. I like Solo. I happen to really like the movie. There was a prompt on Twitter recently where somebody asked, what's your Star Wars comfort movie? And I had to give it some thought because I wasn't sure. And I was like, you know what? Mine's Solo, actually. Really? I'll just turn. Okay. Yeah. I don't know why. I really can't put into words why. There are no Jedi in it, which is sort of, there's not even a mention of Jedi in it, which is sort of strange that I kind of gravitate towards it. But it's one of those that I will just turn it on if I am feeling Star Warsy, because it feels like a very Star Warsy movie. And I love that you brought up the cinematography, because I could be wrong. Someone will have to fact check me if I'm wrong, but I think, didn't the cinematographer also work on The Mandalorian? Did I hear that? Maybe not. Yeah. Okay, got it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Agreed. That's so funny. My comfort is The Force Awakens. I will put that on when I'm cleaning the house. I'll put that on when I'm just hanging out. If I feel like a little bit of Star Wars, I will absolutely put that on and just have it, because I really enjoy that movie. It's a great harken back to the original trilogy. But I'm asking you something. I'm going to put you on the point. As you were talking, I'm going to put you in the spotlight a little bit here, or in the hot seat. Is the reason you enjoy Solo versus Han Solo, do you sense there's more empathy, more care, more of the emotional Han Solo in the Alden Ehrenreich performance and the way they put him in certain situations, his love of Kira, his frustration, his desire to get back to her, the way he frees Chewie, the way he becomes a family with everyone, with Beckett and his old crew? Do you sense there's a little bit more of an emotionally mature Solo in Alden Ehrenreich's performance versus Han Solo's performance in the first trilogy?
I think that part of it is that because Han Solo was sort of an emotionally immature character throughout the entire time that we know him, I think a prequel really works, because you can really capture that essence of the younger Han. It's so easy to figure out like exactly who he is and who he would be. But then you add lace it with like this optimism that Han has. I mean, we hear him say like, I have a really good feeling about this. And I'm like, did Han Solo just say that? Like, that's crazy. So I think I like that they take that character, they honor it in a great way. They lace it with this sort of young, naive optimism that I wouldn't expect out of the character, and that I really appreciate. Part of me for these newer films, the reason I think I sometimes gravitate towards them is because I have the experience of having gotten to see them first when everyone else got to see them first. Whereas sometimes with the other stuff, I sometimes feel like I'm a little bit behind, like I'm falling. Yeah. And I like, that was the big draw for me for Rebels. I'm like, I got to experience the new with everybody. And that was having that sort of nostalgia to fall back on is a comfort to me.
Yeah, I think that's great. And that's the thing. That's why I enjoy doing the show, because Laura and I, like, as I said at the beginning of the show, we have two different approaches to Star Wars. And like, it's great to hear that this is how you experience it versus how I've been experiencing it for a number of decades. There's just a difference. And it's like, it's good to understand how other people go through it and connect to it to give you a better understanding of how you do it and open the door to understand how other people appreciate it and navigate it and how it affects them for sure. Let's get into some of these Streamlabs and Super Chats. We're already an hour into the show. We haven't answered any of these things. Let me see if there's anyone. Let's see. Brett Cohen said, I just think Chewie would have pushed Han back to his family from his love and loss. Yeah, a lot of people feel like Chewbacca, because a lot of people think that Chewie is the one that convinces Han to go back and save Luke in A New Hope and save the Resistance. Do you think Chewie would have forced Han to go and confront Luke and have the conversation, confront Luke and then eventually confront Ben? Do you think Chewie should have done that, or should we have seen him do that in any of the movies?
I think so. I think that would have been, You know, Star Wars has always done a really good job at communicating what Chewie is saying without having Chewie actually say it. And I think that there maybe that was interpreted as a challenge because that's sort of a big conversation to have. You know, we get these little moments of Chewie translation from context, and they're just little moments of conversation, little bits of context. That feels like it would have been a bigger conversation. It would have been a little bit harder to pull off, but you could have pulled it off really easy in a book.
Yeah, that's a good point. You could have pulled it off. Yeah. That's a good point, Laura. Let's see. Lara Lee says, guys, hit that like button. So worth it. Yeah, I didn't even check. I've been enjoying this conversation. We have 92 of you all watching us live with only 79 likes. So please give us a like if you haven't given us a like yet. Hit that thumbs up button. Give us some love for the conversation we're having here on Han Solo and a Star Wars story for sure. Let's hit some Streamlabs as well. I've just told Sean to put the link in the chat. So if any of you want to come in live and ask us questions as we're navigating towards the tail end of the show, please feel free. All right, Jake Yakovetta, what's up, dude? Oh, very kind donation. Thank you, Jake. He says, this is for Laura for being a voice of reason on this show. I don't know what this other guy is saying. Oh, wow. All right. Thanks, Jake. I appreciate it.
Oh, good God. John and I have to balance each other. There has to be two voices of reasons coming from two points of view on this show. Agreed. So that's why it works.
Agreed. Nate D said that the scene in Solo that I loved and wished more people talked about is when Han joins the Imperial Navy. The sky lit orange with fire and explosions, ash-covered stormtroopers, terrifying war cries like, my leg, that was the Star Wars I want. Yeah, great point, Nate. As I said, revisiting it this morning, and I usually like to watch movies now with my headphones so I can hear the extra dialogue that's being said that you might not hear through regular speakers or even a sound bar. And there was a lot of that through that war sequence. And I compare it to Transformers. I think Bumblebee, the first 5 minutes where they're having that fight on Cybertron, people go crazy for that and want to see that. And I think that's a great point you make. The war part of Star Wars doesn't get talked about enough or shown enough on the ground level. And seeing it there in Solo is great to experience. Yeah, what do you think there, Laura? Do you like that scene?
Yeah, I do. And I, you know, he mentioned wanting to get more of like the experience of Han being in the Navy. And I think that was something that was, they did film that, but then it ended up on the cutting room floor. Cause I think we even saw it in a, maybe it was a trailer. Maybe it was just concept art of like Han being in a TIE fighter, being in an Imperial pilot's uniform. I agree. It would have been nice to sort of see more of that experience instead of jumping straight to 3 years later. Now we're on Mimban. Now we're in the mud. I would have liked to have seen a little bit of that transition too.
Yeah.
I would guess it's in the novelization, but it's too bad that it didn't make it to the film.
Do you wonder if we should have had a Solo series where we explored like him growing up through the time and then what he becomes, and then Alden comes in at the tail end of the first season, and Alden is who we follow into these wars and what he experiences and what he goes through, how it changes him, because war changes you, especially 3 years of war. It changes you at a young age. What's he like then coming out of that war and hooking up with Beckett and what have you? I wonder if a series like that we're getting with Ahsoka, like we just got with The Mandalorian and we're going to get with Kenobi. I wonder if a series would have done the character a better service.
I wonder if a certain amount of optimistic Han is too much optimistic Han. If it's too much deviation from the character that we know. We didn't get, you know, we got it. I feel like we got just enough of it in Solo. Mm-hmm. Now, I say that I would have loved to have gotten a sequel to Solo. I would have loved to have gotten a trilogy out of the Solo part of the universe in that time between, you know, where we started in this film to where he ends up in A New Hope. I would have loved to have seen a little bit more of that build. And who knows, maybe someday we will. And maybe I do wonder if maybe that Lando show will include anything, or if that's going to be more of a prequel. I'm not sure really what to expect there. But a big part of my motivation is also I would really love to see where Kira's story goes.
Yes.
I think that would have been really nice to be able to see where, you know, how does her and Maul's relationship play out and ultimately end up leading to Maul's downfall. We know where he ends up. It would be nice to know, you know, a little bit more about how he got there and to be able to see that on screen because he's a cool character to watch on screen. So yeah, I have sort of other motivations for wanting to see more out of the Solo part of the universe. But also I enjoyed the Alden Ehrenreich performance. I would love to see more of it. I thought he did a really good job as Han.
Yeah, and I'd love to see Kira come back, to be honest with you. I'd love to see a little more of Emilia Clarke in that role. And she, you know, as you watch the movie, yes, you're enjoying what Alden is doing. And of course, what Jonas is doing with Chewbacca, but you're also enjoying what Emilia Clarke is doing here. You know, Emilia Clarke doesn't have a lot of success in feature films. People don't go see her movies, unfortunately. She's a damn good actress. She's just chosen some films that haven't really gotten over with people. And watching her in Solo, once again, Solo got pilloried by people. Some people didn't like it. Some people say they didn't even want a Solo movie. They wanted to have the mystery of the character out there. But Kira, or Emilia Clarke rather, acquits herself well as Kira. And so I would love to see her have another shot at this. That change in her after she kills Voss and realizes what she has to do and calls on Maul is such a great subtle change in facial structure, in body positioning. There's a little bit of fear before she puts the ring in because she knows now once I put the ring in, there's no going back. I'm saying goodbye to Han. I'm saying goodbye to his past life. I'm endangering my life by making myself get closer to Darth Maul. Like, there's so much more here to explore with Kira that I agree with you. I'd love to see myself for sure. All right. Yeah. Is there one more thing you wanted to say?
I was just going to make a comment about Kira. Yeah. In my rewatching, I noticed really great acting moments for Emilia Clarke. Yeah. And sort of that first scene where we encounter her on the yacht in the bar area and she sees Han. She's working really hard to not move her face. Mm-hmm. And it's on purpose. I mean, she's trying to sort of stay undercover in, yeah, you know, her sort of role that she plays in Dryden Voss's play.
Right.
But the fact, you know, she's not, it's not super hard. It's really subtle, but it's one of those things where when I first watched the movie, I was just kind of like, why is she not moving her face? Is anyone else bothered by the fact that she's just like, it's just stone, but it's on purpose. And it took me a couple of watches to sort of appreciate that in her approach to the character.
Yeah. Yeah. 1000% agreed. Let's see here. Kate Walton says, like Solo, but hate what they did to Val. As a black female Star Wars fan, I was so excited. It was such a disappointment, but I do think it is a good Han Solo film. Absolutely agree with you. Tandy Newton as Val is such a presence from second one that she is on screen and to see what happens to her. And the thing is, when that moment happens, it's still a powerful moment. Even though you've only had a limited amount of time with Val, Tandy Newton is such an incredible actress that she gives so much life to this character and makes the most of the screen time she has as Val, so that when she makes the decision that she makes, it is a powerful moment, a powerful emotional moment in the film.
I agree. I was so frustrated with this too, because when that happened, I was like, that was so pointless. Like, what was the point of getting, what was the point of getting rid of this really, really cool character? Yeah. And I think one of the first things that I thought of, because, you know, Val's sort of the like pyromaniac of the group, my sort of thoughts immediately went to Sabine Wren from Star Wars Rebels. And I was just like, what if they had done this to Sabine? And like, I can't even fathom what the rationale was behind getting rid of a character like that. And I remember reading an article after the movie came out, because a lot of people complained about this, about how Val should have been around longer. This was a big moment for representation in Star Wars filmmaking. Sure. And then it was just like ripped away immediately. And John Kasdan had something to say where he was just like, well, you know, part of it was just, you know, that Tandy Newton did such a good job and she was such a great actress. And, you know, we had this supporting character and, you know, she brought so much to it. And that's why people are sad. I'm like, that is bullshit. Like, God, they should have just, like, why could she not have stayed in the movie? I just don't, I don't understand.
Well, I think the reason you move her from the movie is because she wouldn't have let Beckett do half the shit he did in the film. And she would have, you know, stopped Han on a number of occasions herself. So in their ideas, writing wise, you have to get rid of the character that knows better than everybody else. And she does. She's the one that tells Beckett one thing. She even has that moment by the fire when she's like, oh, I think it's all bullshit. Everybody needs somebody. Everybody is, people who say they don't is lying. Everybody needs somebody. She's the smartest one of the crew. And so getting rid of her allows all this other stuff to happen. But I agree with you. There's another route they could have taken. There's another, she could have been captured. She could have whatever. Like, there's just another route you could have taken in this situation. And do you think Han would have shot Beckett? That's the thing. I don't think it would have happened because Val would have found a way to find another solution or convince Beckett to help Enfys Nest and not betray Han at the end of the film to Dryden Voss. So there's a way to keep her. You just have to change that entire movie, I think, in the tail end of the film for sure. All right, let's see. We got, some people asked, how do I donate? You see, it's pinned to the private chat there. It's pinned to the chat there at the top. You can also donate going to the Streamlabs right there, or streamlabs.com right there, or look into the description of this. Click on that link and send in any questions. Let's bring in some people live here, Laura. Let's bring in Brennan. Brennan's been waiting to come on. What's
hey,
up,
dude? Laura, hi.
Hi, Brennan. Nice to see you.
Good to see you, too. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
So I'm going to come in with a bit of controversy.
Uh-oh.
I have no
for it.
I have no interest in the Lord and Miller cut.
How dare you? How dare you?
And I'm gonna channel Roca.
Oh, I feel free. Might
they
hurt
were
you.
Hired to do a job. They were hired to direct a script. They did not fulfill their obligation.
Fair.
It's a good point. It's
that
a good
is
point.
On them. Now, could they have come in and written their own script? Sure.
Yeah, they've done so.
That was not the job they were hired to do.
Yeah, the job was not to hire a bunch of actors and write a script and then have them improvise on set. Yeah, that was not what the point
exactly
of this was.
Why I think they blew it. I think they're great filmmakers.
Yes.
But they did not do their job. Now, that being said, I love Solo.
Oh, okay.
I love it as it is. Ron Howard deserves so much credit.
Yes, I don't disagree with that.
I think Alden Ehrenreich is great. I think Donald Glover steals the movie. Mm-hmm. I think the character that I like the most is Enfys Nest.
Yeah.
It's a small role. Aaron Killiman is fantastic.
Yeah.
I just love how exotic she looks. You notice that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
100%. She's half Irish and half African. So she's very, very beautiful. And very... The moment she took off the helmet, it was like, this is fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. She really breathed like new life into the movie that, you know, just at the very end.
Yeah.
And she's just a kid. That's the weird part.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
really, it shows you that she is fighting for freedom.
Yeah.
And she's like 18, 19. She's just a kid.
Right. Right. She's gonna be in Falcon and Winter Soldier. She's rumored to be in Willow. Yeah. And she's in the Green Knight whenever we get to see that.
Oh, finally. Yeah.
2021. But I will say this. I just watched on BBC this show called Don't Forget the Driver, and she's a big part of that show as well. It's kind of a really unusual dark comedy with Toby Jones as her dad. And so it's just an interesting thing. So to see her work in that arena as well, and it wasn't until the second episode that I was like, wait a minute, that's Enfys Nest. It just didn't even occur to me, you know, because, you know, but she's building her brand and she's a very solid, strong actress. And when she takes that helmet off, I think it's such a powerful moment in the movie. I agree with you absolutely, Brennan.
So my question would you be interested?
Oh, now you get the question. All right, yeah, go ahead.
Would you be interested in seeing more of her, like maybe in Andor?
Oh, 1,000%. I mean, even in not even in Andor, I feel like she should get her own show. It could be a totally different series set in a different
or the Lando series that's coming up.
Yeah, setting, and you could set her show between Solo and Andor, because I think he's only, I'm not sure how far back. I think his is only 5 years
true.
Back.
That's true.
Yeah. But I think very much she could hold her own show. I think it would be really fun to sort of bring in Bail Organa into that story, because I think that the sort of logical explanation is that he's working with her in some respect. If
can
they're
you imagine,
working to build the rebellion.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a scene? Enfys Nest, Saw Gerrera, Ahsoka Tano, and Bail Organa.
Yeah, I
like four awesome characters of color. yep. in a scene together.
You want to be in a 100%. Scene with me?
Yeah, I'm down. Yeah,
I would exactly.
Love to see that. All right. Thanks,
that's what I got. Thank you so much.
Much love to you,
thanks,
brother.
Thanks, Brennan. For jumping
in. All right. See ya.
See ya, bud. All right. Let's bring in Darren. What's up, Darren? How you doing, brother?
Good evening. I'm good. Thank you. Hello, Laura. Nice to meet you finally.
Hi, Darren. I like your bandana.
Thank you very much. Go for the Kaiser look as always.
It's a good color.
Yeah. Okay. My question is, what were your thoughts on finally seeing the Kessel Run?
Laura?
You know, I got to say, I feel like it was one of those things that was talked about and built up a lot for a lot of people, but I'd never really paid much attention to that.
Yeah.
Like it just never, it was one of those things. Cause I was one of those people that went into Solo being like, I didn't ask for this movie. I don't need a Han Solo standalone. Look, who asked for this? Why? And I was, you know, I was pleasantly surprised how much I enjoyed it. And then, you know, ultimately proven wrong. I needed a Han Solo standalone movie because I enjoyed it. and getting to see the process of, you know, the Kessel Run, I thought it was interesting. It was fun, but it was one of those things where I wonder if it was, if I had it built up in my mind so much, if it had been a little bit of a letdown. So I'd be curious to hear what other people thought of it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a very cool sequence.
Yeah, I like the sequence watching it in retrospect now. I still think there's a little bit something missing because there's so many odd things that happened during that Kessel Run. But I think overall, the way it's shot, the way it's filmed, the look of it, the overall sequence itself is fun to experience. But I do agree that there's something missing. I don't know what it is exactly, but there's something missing for something as legendary as the Kessel Run. And the fact that he lies about it, Darren. Go ahead.
It certainly shows the versatility of the Millennium Falcon before we see it reused again in Force Awakens, which is probably the best thing I thought about it.
Oh yeah, great point. Yeah,
what they show you from that ship in the Force Awakens was amazing. How it was going upwards, and then she let the engines go, and it flew back down. So it showed you what the ship was capable of.
Yeah.
I do really enjoy the part where it like flips over and flaps down one of the TIE fighters. There's something really satisfying about that scene. It just works for me. I love it.
And also, I don't know if you'd seen the news today, but they've announced that Kevin Kiner will be doing the music for the Bad Batch.
Oh,
good. That's good news. That I think makes the most sense. That works for me.
If it's as good as the music for season 7 of Clone Wars, then I'm all in for it, for sure.
I'm 1,000% in for it. I can't wait. That makes so much sense. Because that season 7 was full of a lot of battles. So it makes sense that Bad Batch, which I hope will be a lot of battles, they'll keep that rhythm going. That's why you get a composer like that who's got experience.
The Betrayal of Sadness in the last 2 episodes. Those 2 songs alone are worth the money.
Agreed, man. Very good point there. Awesome, dude. Good to see you, brother, man. Thanks for stopping in.
As always, see you again.
Thanks, Dave.
Bye-bye.
All right, we got one more person waiting for us. Oh, we got 2 more. Sorry, Ronan Unchained. What's up, Ronan? How are you, man? Good to see you.
How you guys doing? Hello, Laura. Hello, John.
Hello.
So after hearing what you guys thought about Solo, the character, and the film, I think that, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but do you guys think the world of Solo, Star Wars Story was one of, if not strongest element in the film? Because I mean for me, the thing that I kept thinking about, because I went in and be like, oh boy, how bad is this gonna be? And I was like, no, I had fun. I mean, the Imperial guy being Solo, that was cringy, and I still can't get over that.
Oh right, the naming of him. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I looked at my brother and I'd be like, oh no, don't tell me we're going this way. And you know, for me, I don't know about you guys, but for me, somehow Crimson Dawn was the biggest thing that, like, I was just like, okay, there's something to do with, you know, a TV show or a comic book series. Dryden Voss, I know he felt like a standard bad guy, but from just design-wise, his link to Maul, and from what we've seen, that they tease him in The Siege of Mandalore, speaking of Clone Wars, he's, you know, briefly there. He doesn't say much, but that, I think that that's a big factor. What do you guys think of the overall? Like, I love the Sabacc parts, the Crimson Dawn. I think those were some of the best parts of Solo, the film.
Yeah. What do you think, Laura?
Well, I think I've talked about before how one of my favorite like settings or one of my favorite locations in all of Star Wars is Dryden Voss's yacht. That place is so stinking cool. Yeah, the bar in the first light with the two singers. It's just like it's such a crazy, killer, amazing mood. It's a great location. I really enjoyed that part of it. But I think that the world building that they did in Solo was great. I think Corellia worked really well. Even like the blue writing at the beginning, this sort of prologue that introduces like what Corellia is and what it's all about, worked really, really well for me. Lady Proxima, the first time I watched it, I was just like, oh, that was a little bit strange, I guess. But it also, at the end of the day, that's Star Wars. Right. That is purely Star Wars. Is that crazy? That's puppet job. Thing that they exactly. Yeah. So I think a lot of the locations and stuff worked in. Yeah, one of my favorite locations in all of Star Wars is the yacht.
Yeah, it's a great point. I agree. I think they did an incredible job world building. Watching it again this time around, and I will reject this notion. I've heard some people call it a Western. It is not a Western. It's a heist film. It's not
there's
a
elements, Western. Right?
There's
right? Right?
Yeah, there's Western elements, like when you see
the holster.
The holster. Yeah, there's Western elements. But it's an overall heist film. And so to me, that's where I kind of reject that notion that people say it's a space Western. It's a space heist film that has Western elements to it. There's a difference. And so as the outlaw, I'm going to say that. But overall, just from the first few 10 minutes of the movie, the way that they've constructed the sets and everything, it feels so real, so interesting, so new in Star Wars that as the film goes along, it's actually fun to see how they decorate the new environments. And I think Ron Howard and the cinematographer did a fantastic job of pulling the camera back in a lot of sequences. So it felt almost epic-ish at times with the story they were trying to tell. So that's
instead of cutting,
instead of cutting, there were close-ups, obviously, but there's a lot of shots from behind. Even that shot near the end where Beckett and Chewie are walking, it's a helicopter shot around that it's very epic-like from other movies that we've seen in the past. And so much of what I think Ron Howard was doing here is showing his chops as an actor. And I say that after having seen these Da Vinci Code movies, which really fall off the ledge after the first one. he's a masterful director. And maybe this wasn't the best script. And I don't think Ron Howard should get dinged for that. I think John Kasdan should get dinged for that overall, the construction of the movie.
Cinderella Man is so good. I adore.
Yes.
What's weird, I don't know about you guys, but I feel that I like Alden. I looked at my brother and was like, he did a good job. I didn't want to see, Harrison Ford 2.0 because nobody could do that. But, do the smirk, the laugh and whatnot. But I felt that, everything of Solo, of Han that I've seen before the film, I was good. I read the books. I've seen all the movies several times. I know everything of where this guy comes from and where he's going. But I felt that he got, what did he get? He got a similar jacket. He got Chewie. He got DL-44 blaster. He got the lucky dice, which I thought that's how he won. For all these years, they've, making other movies. Like, so this is how Han won the Falcon. Apparently, it's just a lucky charm thing. But it felt like this is weird to say. It felt like Han peaked in 2 days with everything that we know of him so far. Take away personality and what he's grown and whatnot. And yes, Leia and what Kira does, whether you agree or disagree with what she does. I feel like everything that we know of him, it should have, I don't know, it's less is more, I guess, sometimes, even though I did enjoy the film. But I felt like maybe not necessarily the Kessel Run, but this guy could handle this ship and maybe not get out, all the stuff we love of him as soon as possible. But I don't know. Do you guys think there was too much of what we know of him in this one film, or would you like to have sprinkled that throughout the years instead of in just 2 days?
Yeah, I was going to ask if that's kind of what you were getting at. If you were just wishing it had lasted over a longer period of time, or if we had gotten like an episodic series, if that would have worked better for the story structure in some ways. I think there's definitely an argument to be made there. I just would have liked to have gotten more of everything. I don't have a problem with the fact that it took place over like 2 days. There's a few Star Wars films that do that, and it never is never really, I think, bothered me. So I thought it sort of fit with this. But I think for the story and the really great characters that we got, it just would have been really nice to spend more time with them. And a show like The Mandalorian and that sort of structure may have worked better for something like this.
Right.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, it's a weird thing about movies. Some movies, and even with Solo, you can say this. Some movies, the character is introduced and you're like, I need more. And either whether it's the actor or it's the character itself or the situations they put them in, I need more. With Val, I didn't need more. With Dryden Voss, I needed more. With Solo, I needed more. And so it's just a weird combo of things. And sometimes a whole movie, like, we didn't know who Jabba was when we started Return of the Jedi. Or we saw Jabba, I guess, and we heard him mentioned, but we didn't know who he was until we saw. And then when we saw him, we're like, boom, that totally works. Yeah. With Dryden Voss, we got Dryden Voss. We didn't know much about Dryden Voss. As you said, he's mentioned, but we don't know much about him. And there's not much given when you're watching the movie other than he's a, you know, kind of an evil guy to cross. But I would have liked to have a little bit more, you know. And now, in retrospect, I wonder about the switch from Michael Kenneth Williams to Paul Bettany, what that was all about when Ron Howard took over. So it's just an interesting film that I think in certain places needed a little more and in other places didn't. And I think that's where I sometimes don't. That's where I think I have some issues with Solo and can't fully say it's a great film because of that. So
that's,
I hear,
fair,
your point. Yeah. Yeah. All right, Ronan, thanks so much for coming in, man. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good seeing you guys. Take care. Happy New Year.
You too.
Thanks, Ronan.
All right, Sean, you still want to ask your question? Come on in. All right, you're delaying the hangout with the Patreons, but all right, go ahead, Sean. What's your question?
Oh, wow, you got to put that on me?
Just saying. 6:30 p.m. was the schedule. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to just say hi, Laura. Happy New Year to you.
Hello. Happy New Year to you, Sean.
So basically, my issues with I don't know why John is laughing. My issues with Solo is, I agree with you, Laura, it's not a movie that I wanted. And the reason why is because of the same thing like with the prequels, is if you're going to tell someone's backstory, especially like an iconic character like Solo, just the same way like the prequel trilogy told the backstories of Anakin / Darth Vader, you got to be very, very careful, because we know the character as such. And then if you start filling in the gaps that we didn't even want answered, we're going to all look at the character completely differently. So like going into Solo, with certain things we know about him. Coming out of Solo, you're like, I learned things that I don't know if I want, like his name thing, that just doesn't make any damn sense. Right. Like, you could have the exact same scene, but just let Han come up with the Solo name himself. Like, the guy could ask him the exact same thing. What's your name? Han. What's your surname? I don't have one. What do you mean you don't have one? Everybody has one. Well, I'm kind of alone. You still need a last name. Solo. Like, something like that.
Sure.
Makes more sense than this guy, random guy, to say, oops, you're Solo. Like, that makes no sense to me. If you watched the original trilogy and then I told you some random guy gave him his last name, you wouldn't believe it. It just doesn't. They did the character a disjustice. And the Kessel Run, the way Han talks about the Kessel Run, there's no way, if you watch the original trilogy, you think he's lying about it. Like, to me, the movie Solo just did a disservice to Han Solo character. Yes, we learned more about him. Yes, the movie is, I agree with you, John, is a beautiful thing to watch.
Yeah, it is.
Visually, stunning. The performances, amazing. Better than I expected. But just the character of Solo, the movie's called Solo. I'm thinking this should be a beacon and a love story to the Han Solo character. And I think it for me, it disrespected him. It betrayed the character that we know and love as Han Solo. It's not him. Wait. Now, and here's kind of where I want to ask you guys, because I think the movie's half pregnant. It doesn't know what it wants to be, in the sense that, is this a movie that takes place years before we're supposed to meet him? Or right when we're supposed to meet him? And I think the movie was confused on what kind of story and what kind of Han we're supposed to meet. Because it makes not as much sense if it's like really close to Star Wars. Yeah, New Hope. It doesn't make that much sense to me. It would make more sense if it was further away. And then something happens to Han in the middle. And then that's where a Solo 2 or miniseries could come into play to kind of fill in those gaps to see what lessons he learned, why he unlearned them. And then that's why we get the Han we see in A New Hope. So for me, the story just kind of doesn't make a lot of sense to me. What do you guys think?
I mean, teach their own.
Yeah.
That it's one of those things where, you know, people don't think that the characters in the sequel trilogy had any personality, and that's it's a totally subjective, you know, it's subject to your opinion. I would disagree, but only because I really enjoyed the story, and I can also see the flaws in it. Mm-hmm. And I understand where people are coming from. The Solo getting his name thing was so stupid. And I think part of it was that I don't think it contributed to it, but I think the fact that Bob Iger or somebody mentioned it on like one of the investor calls being like, we're going to learn how Han Solo got his name. Like, oh, you should not have said anything. Like, just let that one go, and also cut it from the script, for Christ's sake. I get where you're coming. I also think it just would have made total sense if he had just been Han Solo from the start. If he was like, hi, my parents' last names are Solo. I am Han. I wouldn't have had a problem with that at all.
Me neither.
Yeah. Or even when he was like put into the system, they just used Solo because he didn't have parents and he was a solo kid. He was on his own.
It's the John Doe of Star Wars. Yeah.
Right.
That's fair too.
Absolutely. I don't think it did the character disservice, because we're all going to love it, Sean. Love him either way, Sean. But I hear your point, though, on some other way handles some of the things. Yeah, the way Solo talks about the Kessel Run. But remember, he's a smuggler. He's a shyster. People want to love and respect and revere Solo. He's a smuggler. He cheats people all the time, which is ironic because he gets mad that Lando cheats him in Solo. But he's a guy who's constantly in trouble with these people who hire him because he's doing other deals or kind of doing stuff on the side. The reason Jabba wants to put him in is because of him getting screwed over on a deal. So Han has the reputation of being a good smuggler, but also the reputation of a guy who doesn't necessarily always deliver what you want, and you have to chase him down. He's essentially, you know, you got like there's debtors and creditors that are calling Han all the debt collectors rather calling Han all the time. So I mean, you know, well,
The 30 hired guns he claims that he has. I mean, like Han's an unreliable narrator in his own life, and
I don't know why. Yeah. I know, but I'm just saying, but listen, he even in The Force Awakens, he's still portraying this lie about the Kessel Run. It's like, what kind of an insecure man is he really if he's still lying many years later?
Did you not listen to the first hour of the show? He hasn't grown up. He still thinks.
I know, but...
How many men do you know who still talk about throwing the winning touchdown? And it gets like exponentially more incredible every time they tell it as they get older. Men are terrible, and we need this, and it's a horrible.
John, in general specs, I totally agree with you. For me, I just think it just does the character a little bit of a disservice. That's not something I think he would lie about. Would he lie about certain things? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. But the way he loves that ship so much, it robs his relationship with the ship if he has to, because the way he like talks about the ship, like this ship did the Kessel Run.
Yeah.
Like. He's kind of lying about its mystique a little bit. So that's just, you know, that's just me. Maybe, you know, maybe I'm looking at it in a weird way.
No, I think you have a right to your opinion, Sean. Absolutely. You know, Laura and I don't always have to agree with anybody's opinion or our own opinions. So it's totally subjective, as she said. So if you feel that way, more power to you, my man. You know, I just don't 100% agree.
Maybe I should watch it one more time. I haven't seen it in a little bit. I should watch it.
I will say this third time, I enjoyed it a lot more than I did the second time, for sure.
That's a good point.
Thanks, Sean. Good to see you, brother.
Thanks, Sean. That's
our producer, Sean Barreto, here on the show. All right. Well, I think we should wrap up there, Laura. Another great conversation about this section of Star Wars. Thanks to everybody who sent in the Streamlabs and Super Chats, and definitely those of you who came in live to ask us questions. We do one live show every month, and it's a fun thing to do. And, you know, it's always great when you all participate. Please remember, hit that like button on this. And if you're watching this later, and a lot of you all do, please leave a comment. The comments and the likes elevate the visibility of the show and bring more people into the Jedi Way family to enjoy the content we do on the show. Laura, any final words, and where can they find you and everything you got going on?
No, I think that kind of covers it for me. I've been diving into a lot of Star Wars movies and a lot of Solo content recently for reasons that shall remain unspoken. But if you want to come find me on social media, you can find me on Twitter at shutup_Laura. That's my Instagram handle as well. However, I'm far more active on Twitter, so come find me there. I host a show called Force Toast, a Star Wars Happy Hour. That's an audio podcast with my friend Alice, where we drink wine and talk about Star Wars. And you can find that on Twitter at Force Toast Pod.
And don't you have a show coming up where you're a guest of Molly Damon and Jillian? Is that show coming
up? That's right. Yeah, that's on Saturday night. That's going to be live on Saturday night on the Certain Point of View YouTube channel. And there's a link to that in my on my Twitter page somewhere. But yeah, it's the debut of their show. Jill and Molly are hosting just a happy hour show that's not necessarily about Star Wars, not necessarily about Schmodown. It's just going to be us shooting the shit for X amount of time and enjoying cocktails. So I'm excited.
That's good. Three awesome
Thanks
ladies.
For the reminder.
Of course, of course. It's always good to plug stuff. You guys can find me at The Roca Says on Twitter and on Instagram right below. As well, as I said already, please remember to subscribe to the channel, share the video, like the video, all that jazz. I think that's it. Laura, what do we got to tell them before we get on out of here?
Until next time, Han Solo fans, remember your focus determines your reality.